Welcome to Through the Bible with Les Spelding, a 30-minute walk through the Scriptures, teaching in-depth Bible truths that change people's lives. Now, here's your host, Les Spelding.
Okay, it's good to see everybody out this afternoon from our Oklahoma area, and again, for those of you joining us on television, wherever you are, we welcome you, and we just trust that you'll open the book and take notes and study with us. And after all, this is all we hope to be, is an instrument that will cause people to study their own Bible, search these things out. Don't take my word for anything any more than I want you to take someone else's word for it. We're finding more and more how people will respond to the fact that they've never studied their Bible on their own, but we're triggering it. In fact, we just had an instance on our cruise last week. A gentleman came up the first night, and he said, Les, he said, I just can't agree with you on some of these things. And that's fine. I said, but have you ever really made a study of it? Well, no, not really. And I said, well, just study. Don't take my word for it. Just take to heart the things that I'm pointing out. You know, by the last class night that we had on the ship, he came up with a big smile and he says, you've got me just about convinced. Well, that's all we ask, see, is search the Scriptures and see if these things are really so. Again, we want to thank our television audience for your prayer support, your financial help, how we appreciate your letters. Again, the other day we had two or three that just about make everything worthwhile. You know, we don't take any large amounts of money from the ministry. I just feel compelled to let our television audience know because I think some have got the wrong idea. Iris and I still live in the same house we've lived in for the last 29 years. A lot of our furniture is the same furniture we started with 50 years ago. So the television ministry hasn't made a nickel's worth of difference in our lifestyle, and we want people to know that we're not in this for any financial return. We are just hopefully getting people to search the Scriptures, and many of them are finding a salvation that they thought they had and suddenly realized they never had. And so we just continue to thank every one of you for everything, the prayers, the finances, everything. Okay, now we're taking a study of Isaiah because for those of you who are new listeners, we've come up through the Old Testament, through the New Testament, and have pretty much made a study of the whole Bible over these last years. And then I decided to come back and spend a little more time in areas that we skipped over, such as the book of Isaiah. Again, I have to repeat and repeat and repeat because otherwise somebody doesn't get it. Now, this is a book of prophecy written 700 years before Christ. Now, that's a long time. Now, I think maybe by our next half hour, I'll try and put a timeline on the board and show how that Moses, of course, and the children of Israel picked up the Ten Commandments and law about 1500 B.C. About 500 years later, you have King David and Solomon. And then after Solomon's demise, of course, the nation was split into two areas, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. And the ten tribes of the north, of course, are going into idolatry and wickedness and unbelief faster than the two tribes of Judah. But pretty much it's the whole nation that Isaiah is going to be addressing. Now, the whole book of Isaiah is a roller coaster of sorts of judgment and chastisement and blessing. Judgment and blessing, over and over. But the whole thing is looking forward to three major periods of time when the nation of Israel would come under intense judgment or chastisement. The first one, of course, is the one that was just only 100 years beyond Isaiah, and that would be in 606 B.C. Isaiah writes at 700, so that's about 100 years earlier. And that's, again, that's a reminder. God's wheels turn ever so slowly. And here's Isaiah prophesying what's going to be coming on the nation of Israel, but it doesn't really reach fruition for 100 years. And so that's, again, why I always temper our excitement for the rapture. Yes, I think it's close, but on the other hand, God's wheels turn so much slower than we think they should, that we can't just rest and say, oh, well, the Lord's coming next week, so what? I'll never forget. A fellow wrote from Pennsylvania a couple springs ago, and he said, Les, I was just getting ready to plant an apple tree. And then it struck me. Why? the Lord's coming. And I said, you go ahead and plant it, because we don't know that he's going to come that soon. We hope he does, but he may not. So anyway, Isaiah is prophesying primarily now of the Babylonian invasion, which is going to come under Nebuchadnezzar in 606 B.C. But he's also giving an indication of the next great chastisement of Israel, and that would be in 70 A.D., after they had rejected the Messiah and crucified him and so forth. And then you know that the Roman general Titus came in, and again, just like Nebuchadnezzar, destroyed the temple, ruined the city, and the people were sent out into a dispersion. But then the final one that is underlying all of these is the worst one of all, and that, of course, is the judgment of the tribulation. That final 7 years that will lead up to then the greatest blessing that Israel and the world has ever seen, which will be the appearance then of the king and the kingdom. So as we study these things in Isaiah, and I'm not going to take all 66 chapters verse by verse, we're just going to hit some of the highlights and move on to other things probably even after today. But always keep in mind that we're dealing with God's chastisement to be followed by a blessing. Chastisement followed by a blessing. And in the last one, the tribulation will be followed by the return of Christ and the setting up of that glorious kingdom. Okay, so now let's come back to where we left off, I think, about several weeks back in Isaiah chapter 2. And we might as well start at verse 1, and we'll pick up our study in verse 3. Verse 1, the word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now you see, that's the southern kingdom. And it shall come to pass in the last days. Now he's leaping all the way to the end of time as we know it, to the second coming and the establishing of the glorious kingdom. And it'll come to pass in the last days that the mountain or the kingdom of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains. It'll be above all other empires and governments. It'll be exalted above the hills, that is, the smaller states and nations. And all nations, now this is what we want to emphasize, that when this kingdom becomes a reality, it's not just going to be Israel, it'll be the whole world that will come under Christ's benevolent rule. All nations will flow to Jerusalem. And you remember when we studied this verse, I compared it with our present day world, where most of the world looks to America. You know, I read an interesting statement just last night on something, I don't remember where, but it was so apropos. So many people hate America. So many people think we're so awful. But this guy says, wait a minute. Open all the borders of the world, and where will they all go? Straight to America. Oh, they may think they hate us, but they also know there's no other place on earth like our beloved America. Well, we're just a little foretaste of what this glorious kingdom under Christ's kingship will be like, and all the world will literally flow toward and through Jerusalem. All right, now then, verse 3, we're going to move on. And many people shall go and say, come ye, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion. Now remember, Zion is a little hill in Jerusalem. Not like the hymn writer puts it, we're marching to Zion, you know, the heavens. Zion is in Jerusalem, and that's the hill from which David's throne went forth. All right, and so out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. It will be the capital of the world. And he will judge, or he will rule among the nations, plural. Rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. It's this glorious coming kingdom. Now, all the Old Testament is looking forward to it, but the one that I like to compare the most is Amos. Now, if you'll move ahead with me, some of these are not easy to find, but find Daniel, Hosea, Joel, and then you should come to Amos. Daniel, Hosea, Joel, and then Amos, and move all the way to chapter 9, verse 13. Now, Amos is even writing quite a few years before Isaiah does. Amos is writing almost 800 B.C. And he says basically the same thing. And, of course, that's the beauty of Scripture. Amos, chapter 9, verse 13. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, the treader of grapes, him that soweth the seed, and the mountains shall drop sweet wine, and all the hills shall melt. Now, those are merely adjectives to describe tremendous production, tremendous food production. All right, verse 14. I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel. They shall build the waste cities, and they shall inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and drink the wine thereof. They shall also make gardens and eat the fruit of them. And I will plant them, God says, upon their land. They shall no more be pulled up out of their land, which I have given them, saith the Lord. That's their prospect. See, it hasn't happened yet. And then there are those who say this never will happen. Well, then we might as well throw the book away and go home. Because God says it will happen. And it's still future. All right, now then, if you'll back up a few pages to Jeremiah. Jeremiah 31:31, where we have the spiritual setting for this same kingdom. It's going to be physical. There are going to be people, regular flesh and blood people, who are reproducing. They're having children. They're having families. And this will be the spiritual setting. Jeremiah 31:31. And again, this hasn't ever happened yet, but it's going to. Now, for the born-again believer, we have a taste of it. We certainly have a segment of this that is as a result of our salvation. But for the nations as a whole, no, this has never happened. All right, Jeremiah 31:31. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. This is what we call the new covenant. It's not made to the church, it's made to Israel. All right, now verse 32. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand and brought them out of the land of Egypt, which covenant they broke. Now, that's the speaking of the Ten Commandments, the Mosaic Covenant. Israel never was able to keep it. See? All right, but this is what's going to happen when Christ finally returns and sets up this glorious kingdom. Verse 33, but this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law in their inward parts. It's just going to be part and parcel of them. I will write it in their hearts. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. They will teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me. There will be no opposition. There will be no unbelief. See? All right, coming back then, if you will, to Isaiah chapter 2 again. Now we're going to run into some verses that depict the opposite side again. This is the glory in their prospect. But this is Israel at the contemporary time that Isaiah is writing. Their worldliness, their wickedness, their unbelief. See? All right, verse 6. Therefore thou hast forsaken thy people, the house of Jacob, because they replenished from the east. They are soothsayers like the Philistines. They're no different than the pagan Gentiles around them. They please themselves in the children of strangers. Their land is full of silver and gold. In other words, they were prosperous materially. Neither is there any end of their treasures. Their land is also full of horses. Neither is any end of their chariots. But verse 8. What's alongside of it? Idols. Their land is full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands. that which their own fingers have made. Then are down to verse 10. Enter into the rock and hide in the dust for the fear of the Lord and for the glory of His majesty. That's what they'd better do. Verse 11, the lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. All right, now let's just make a comparison with the New Testament. Drop all the way up to Revelation. Come all the way up to Revelation. I think it's chapter 6. Revelation chapter 6. Verse 15 and 16. You see, God never changes. Basically, the human race never changes. You know, we like to think we're living in a modern era. Well, I'm going to show you, if we have time in this program, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. Not even the apparel of the female of the race. It's all the same. All right, but look at this one. How it compares almost word for word with what Isaiah wrote. Revelation chapter 6, verse 15. Now, this is at the end of the tribulation, or not the end of the tribulation, in the heart of the tribulation, really, about the midpoint. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains. And they said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us, hide us from the face of him who sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. God isn't always a God of mercy and grace. He has shown his wrath in times past, especially with Israel, but the greatest showing of his wrath is yet future. And then verse 17, for the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Well, that's the New Testament account of the final judgment, which will be those last 7 years. All right, back to Isaiah chapter 2 again. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 12. For the day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon everyone that is proud and lofty, upon everyone that's lifted up, he shall be brought low. Verse 13, upon the cedars of Lebanon, which is always a biblical description of beauty and, I think, pride and arrogance, the cedars of Lebanon. They're high and lifted up, and all the oaks of Bashan. Verse 14, on the high mountains, upon the hills that are lifted up, and so on and so forth. And then come all the way down to verse 19 again. They shall go into the holes of the rocks and the caves of the earth for fear of the Lord and for the glory of His majesty when He ariseth to shake terribly the earth. In that day a man shall cast his idols of silver, his idols of gold, which they made each one for himself to worship, to the moles and to the bats, to go into the clefts of the rocks, their fear of the wrath of God, and into the tops of the ragged rocks for fear of the Lord and for the glory of His majesty when He ariseth to shake terribly the earth. Well, you continue on in chapter 3 now, and you'll find that it's the same thing, how God is going to be dealing with His idolatrous, wicked, worldly-minded nation of Israel. And the judgments are sure. And remember now, they're going to be in three periods of time. The immediate, or at least 100 years, in David's time, Isaiah's time, when Nebuchadnezzar will come and destroy the city and take the nation captive. The second one, remember, is when Titus comes in 70 AD, and then the third one just prior to Christ's second coming. All right, now let's see. I wanted to find some of these. Okay, coming on into chapter 3. Yeah, I want to get this first half hour. Coming on into chapter 3, we continue. It's the prophecy concerning the devastation of the city of Jerusalem in particular, but the nation of Israel in general. And come all the way down, if you were, to verse 10 and 11. Let's start at verse 10. Because even in the midst of all of this idolatry and all of this wickedness, remember there is a remnant of Jews who still remain true to Jehovah. There's always that small percentage remnant. But the vast majority are going to take the nation down the tube. You know, that's why I've mentioned since we've been studying Isaiah. This is my fear of even our own beloved America. We are such a picture of ancient Israel, who had all of the opportunities and the privileges of understanding God and understanding His righteousness, but the vast majority walked it underfoot. Well, our nation the same way. My, I was reading again a quote from one of the previous presidents of Harvard University, and you would never believe that it was the president of Harvard, but it was biblical. And, of course, that was the whole purpose of all the Ivy League colleges and universities, was to teach the Word of God. And now look at it. They scorn it. They ridicule it. Well, Israel was no different. But God is only going to take it just so long. And then judgment falls. All right, now here we go. In Isaiah chapter 3, verse 9. That the show of their countenance doth witness against them, and they declare their sin as Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have rewarded evil unto themselves. Sound familiar? My, we're right there. All right, now verse 10. Say to the righteous, that little remnant of believers, that it shall be well with him, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. But now verse 11. Woe to the wicked. It shall be ill with him, for the reward of his hand shall be given him. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they who lead thee cause you to err, and destroy the way of thy paths. The Lord standeth up to plead, standeth to judge the people, and he will enter into judgments with the ancients of his people and the princes thereof, for you have eaten up the vineyard. Now you want to remember that God uses the picture of a beautiful, productive vineyard to symbolize the nation of Israel. You remember one of the parables that Jesus gave back in Matthew? He prepared a vineyard, dug it up, fertilized it, irrigated it, got everything ready so it would be in peak production, and then left. You remember? So Israel is always depicted as a productive, beautiful vineyard. All right? Then come on down to verse 16, moreover, the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion, now who are we talking about? The women, especially the young women. All right? Moreover, the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty, walk with stretched forth necks. What does that show? Pride, arrogance, and wanton eyes. Today we would call them what? Seductive. Walking and mincing as they go, and making a tinkling with their feet. Now, as you come down through these verses, I want you to see that everything we see today was already in vogue 800 years before Christ. Isn't that amazing? It can't help but make you smile. All right, verse 18. We'll just take a couple here. Our time's running out. In that day, verse 18. The Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet and their cauls and their round tires like the moon. I haven't been able to figure out what the round tires are. It must be a jewel of some kind, a bracelet or whatever. All right, the chains and the bracelets, verse 19. The mufflers, the bonnets, the ornaments of the legs, the headbands, the tablets, the earrings, the rings, and so help me, what's the next one? Isn't it amazing? And these kids today think that they are just discovering all this. It's as old as time itself, all right? The nose jewels, verse 22, the changeable suits of apparel. Why, this comes right out of a fashion magazine, doesn't it? The changing suits of a parable, the mantles, the wimples, the crisping pins, the glasses, the fine linen, the hoods, the veils. It's all right there. And we're no different today. God hated it then. He hates it now. But oh, they think that this is a sign of being modern. Well, I think I've made my point. It's as old as time itself. All right, now then, to finish up our minutes we have left. Verse 24, it shall come to pass. Because, see, Israel has gone to the place that's all they're living for. That's all that matters to them. Their material wealth. Their everyday living to satisfy the desires of the flesh. God didn't mean anything to them. He was so far removed from their thinking. All right, so it shall come to pass that instead of the sweet smell, there shall be stink, it'll be an odor. And instead of a girdle, a rent. Instead of a well-set hair, a beautiful, well-coiffured hairdo, it'll be what? Baldness. What a difference. And instead of a stomacher, a girding of sackcloth, burning instead of beauty. The men shall fall by the sword, and the mighty in the war. Her gates, now we're speaking of Jerusalem in particular, her gates shall lament and mourn, and she being desolate shall sit upon the ground. What does that depict? Not even an easy, comfortable chair to relax in. Everything that they thought was so important would be taken away. Now, it hadn't happened yet. You know, that's the beauty of prophecy. It writes as if it's already past, but it's still future. And, of course, this is looking forward to the time when first the Assyrians will come in from the north and take the 10 tribes. And then about 100 years after that, here comes Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian horde, and they besiege Jerusalem, and thousands upon thousands of Jews lost their life in that siege. And then finally they break through and they destroy that beautiful temple. Now remember, all during this time, that glorious temple of Solomon is at the heart of all of Israel's thinking. Oh, they're religious to the hilt. They're proud of their temple. But there's no spiritual life. They are wicked. They are idolatrous. They're worshiping the gods of the pagans around them. And, of course, that's going to be the primary purpose, then, of the Babylonian captivity, which will last 70 years, after which that remnant comes back from Babylon, will never again worship idols.
Thank you for watching Through the Bible with Les Feldick. Through the Bible is a partner-supported ministry. If this program has been a help to your study of the Scriptures and you'd like to see others enjoy the teaching, your support would be greatly appreciated. Write to us at Les Feldick Ministries, 30706 West Lona Valley Road, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or call 1-800-369-7856. Remember, all programs are available in printed form, audio cassette, and videotape. Be sure to tune in next time to Through the Bible with Les Feldick.